Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and you. 844-326-3663 is the number to participate in the radio program this morning, should you elect to do so. That's the number to call and be on the air. That is the number to text. And I will read it on the air if you'd like to get at us in that direction. 844-326-3663 is the number to be a part of the program. We've got a lot we have talked about so far this morning. I will not recap the last hour because even though we've talked about it for a solid 35 minutes or so, it is also an item on the water cooler cheat sheet. We do the water cooler cheat sheet at 7 a.m. every day or somewhere close to it. But we'll do it now because Monday Night Football's in the bag. Now we wait till Thursday. Now we've just got to kill a couple of days of waiting, anticipating until we get some Thursday night college and professional football on the television, which means that Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday, all about killing time. You know, I would like to live by the philosophy of live every day like it's your last. Go out there, do the things that you want to do. Experience the things you want to experience because you just never know. Don't take a single day for granted. And I do agree and subscribe to that philosophy. At the same time, it's football season. Let's get to Thursday. So we're here to help you kill a little bit of time. Because when you get to the office, you're going to work for, I don't know, 7 to 12 minutes right out of the rip. Make the boss think that you actually care. And then you're going to walk down that long hallway, head on down to the break room, and go talk to Janice. Janice works in graphic design. And she's a lovely young lady, but you've seen a different side of Janice on Saturdays when college football kicks off and she's got the face paint and the matching earrings and all of it. She's a psycho on game day. You love talking sports with Janice, but you don't want to go and embarrass yourself in front of Janice. You want to know what the hell's going on in the world of sports. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is why every morning, just after 7 a.m., Lonzo and I do this. Dadgummit. It is the water cooler cheat sheet, the top three sports stories you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports this a.m. with your coworkers or your manager, your supervisor, your boss, your janitor, your electrician, your IT guy, whoever you talk sports with to kill some time, this is what you will be talking about. Let us dive right in with item number one. Rob Brown knows ball. Tried to tell you that 3.5 line felt a little wonky, felt like Las Vegas was trying to trap some people. 85% of the money, 70% of the total bets last night came down on the Kansas City Chiefs. And I said, yo, you see an 84% and Vegas doesn't move the line. That means somebody knows something. Somebody got eyes on the script. Well, they did. Jacksonville, 31-28 winners last night over the Kansas City Chiefs. Don't look now, but these Jaguars are 4-1 off the rip. You know that team Rob Brown predicted to win the AFC South. Now, granted, the Indianapolis Colts are also 4-1 because Danny Dimes is dropping those. But TL16 looked good last night. 18 of 25, 221 yards, a tutty and a pick. The pick was, I think it was an NHF INT. a not-his-fault pick. But 1-1 on the tutty-to-pick ratio. He also ran it 10 times for 54 yards, including a pair of rushing touchdowns. At one point in this game, the Jacksonville Jaguars trailed by 14 points. They came back and won the game, handing Kansas City its largest blown lead in a football game dating back to 2014 for these Kansas City Chiefs. You also had a good night out of Brian Thomas Jr. That guy had taken some heat, including from me. He has been a big-time disappointment. I pointed out when he got drafted that I genuinely believed that if Brian Thomas Jr. did not play on the same team as Malik Nabers, he would have been looked at the same way that Malik Nabers was looked at. He just played on the same team as Malik Nabers, who was a freak at LSU. And Brian Thomas Jr. put a little bit of that athleticism on display last night. 4 snags, 80 yards yesterday evening, but it was a bit of, I don't want to say a full-on outright coming out party for Travis Hunter last night, but it kind of was. 3 snags, 64 yards, also had a number of tackles and pass breakups last night. He looked more like the number 2 overall pick in the NFL draft. He looked like the guy that Jacksonville traded up to go get and bring down to Duval to be a member of the Jaguars organization. And because he looked like that dude last night, Jacksonville gets the home win. They are 4-1, 3-0 at the crib. And Kansas City, for the second time this season now, with a losing record for the first time in a very, 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 very long time. Is there a bounce back for Kansas City? Because whether you like it or not, whether you think it is a fair narrative or not, you know what the narrative is going to be all this week. And OBT dubs. Who do the Chiefs have lined up against this Sunday? No big deal, just the Detroit Lions coming to the crib. So the road only getting tougher, because after the Lions, they get a bit of a break against the 1-4 Raiders. But then it's Jaden Daniels and the Commanders. Then it's at Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. Then it's at the Denver Broncos and Bo Nix, who just knocked off the Eagles. Then it's at Dallas, always a good regular season team. It's not easier from this point forward for the Chiefs.
You know what all those teams have? All those teams you mentioned.
Except the Raiders. They're bad.
They all have losses.
They do all have losses.
They all do. You know what that means? I could be wrong, but I'm not. That means they can be beat.
They absolutely can be beaten. But so can the Chiefs. Like, that's why I will say this. The AFC right now is weird, dude. It's weird. It's not like, I mean, it's very entertaining. But it's weird because the Jags and the Colts are on top of the AFC right now. The Ravens and the Chiefs have very valid questions being asked about them. Listen, I don't mind the Ravens' loss last week. They had like 9 starters, including Lamar Jackson, who were out. That was always going to be a tough ride. However, I watched the Houston Texans punch them in the friggin' mouth, and they had zero response to it. It's much like I said about South Carolina and that loss to Mizzou. It's not that you lost. Sorry, I'll say Vandy, not Mizzou. It's not that you lost to Vandy. It is how you lost to Vandy. You had no fight, which has not ever been true. I got to tell you, I don't like the dude. I got to wonder what Ray Lewis's house sounded like during that Ravens game on Sunday. I wonder what Ray Lewis had to say about that game, because that was not what we came to get used to.
All this kind of, you're kind of implying that the Chiefs didn't try last night. And
No. The Ravens. Okay. Let me be very clear. All right. I don't think the Chiefs didn't try.
Because other than the outcome, which I didn't like, it was a good game.
It was a great game. I'm not insinuating the Chiefs didn't try. What I am not insinuating but outright saying is the talent gap between the Chiefs and everybody else is not, I'm not even going to say not as big as it. It's not there. It's not there. Like, this is not a team that can go out and out-talent slash out-play call you like they used to. You have to be perfect now if you're Kansas City. You used to have some room for error. That's not there for KC anymore.
I know we're in the middle of this, but I'm curious about what the Vegas odds are for the AFC championship.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I have them. And we'll take a look at those a little bit later in the show, because the AFC's drunk and I love it. However, we have to get to item number 2. As much as I enjoyed Monday Night Football last night, and I did very much, it was a spectacular evening to have four TVs going in the Bro Cave because Major League Baseball kicked ass last night, too. We opened it up with the Dodgers-Phillies contest in Philadelphia. Two games in Philly, two Philly losses, just like that. The LA Dodgers on the road at Philly for the first two have pushed the Phillies to the brink of elimination. Jesus Luzardo went last night for the Phillies. Six innings, gave up just three hits and two runs. Unfortunately, the Phillies couldn't hit the baseball as well as they had been coming into this. And this is what I said about this Phillies team was my concern. It is a damn good baseball team. The problem is, because they lost Zach Wheeler, because there are questions about Aaron Nola, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. A team that, throughout the course of the year, had a really good pitching staff, all of a sudden there's a lot of questions about the pitching staff. And when you have questions about the pitching staff, and you are a team that lives and dies by the big dongs, you can find yourself in trouble if the bats aren't there. Well, last night, the bats were not there. The Phillies did have seven hits in this game, but no dongs and just three XBHs. Castellanos and Realmuto had doubles. Kepler had a triple, and that was it. They went 2-for-7 with runners in scoring position. On the flip side, the Dodgers also had seven hits. They also had, however, two extra base hits, but they all went for RBIs. Hernandez had a few. Smith had a couple. Will Smith, by the way, making his return, checked in as a pinch hitter and then took over as catcher later in the game. Shohei had his fifth RBI of the postseason as well. Will Smith's and Shohei's RBIs all came with a pair of outs for the Dodgers. Blake Snell, six innings, one hit, no runs. Cade, nine, an absolute dog last night. We're going to hand out our TMF INR awards later on. Blake Snell might catch a baseball TMF INR for his performance last night. This series heads back in a day tomorrow evening to Los Angeles, California, and the Dodgers just need to take one of the two at the crib. In the other National League game, there were 10 runs scored in a 7-3 win by the Milwaukee Brewers over the Chicago Cubs. Every run in this baseball game was either of a or scored by a home run in this game. It opened up with Seiya Suzuki going 440 to straightaway center, a three-run blast, and it was like, dang, there's them Cubs we've been waiting for. Yeah, except for right after that in the exact same inning, Andrew Vaughn came to the dish for Milwaukee, and he went 382 to left for a three-run blast, one inning, six runs, all scored by the big dong. It was 3-3. Contreras would homer to left in the third to make it 4-3 Milwaukee. Churio would then homer to center in the bottom of the fourth. Another three-run shot that would make it 7-3, and the Brew Crew were happy to just ride that one out. It was Ashby who got the start. Aaron Ashby got the start for Milwaukee, gave up three hits, and obviously the three runs on the Seiya Suzuki blast got yanked after just 1.2. It was a bullpen game. However, the highlight of the bullpen game, I'd like to welcome back Jacob Mizorowski to the national scene. You will remember back during the summer tie-in that for a minute there, it looked like it was going to be the summer of Miz. The summer of the Miz. Because for a minute there, Jacob Mizorowski, when he got the ball and went to the bump, he was what we were watching in baseball. Last night, he looked like that guy again. Three innings, one hit, four Ks. He threw last night 57 pitches. 31 of them were 100 miles an hour or faster, including three of them at 104 miles per hour. I'm going to say this. I'm going to enjoy this kid while I can. Nothing but gas. He's like Randy Johnson. He's a big dude, so he's got that long body that makes it easier for him to throw 101, 2, 3, 4 than most other guys. I'm also going to tell you, if he's going 57 pitches across three innings, if they plan on him starting again at some point, and I suspect that they will once he kind of, you know, he had like the incredible run out of the gate, and then the control kind of got away from him. I think he started reading the press headlines. If he's going to go back to starting, he's got to be more efficient with the pitches. Watch him while you can get it, because the human body was not evolved to throw 104 miles an hour consistently. And we wrap it up, of course, with item number three. Two college football stories joined into one. The Auburn Tigers announced yesterday that they are moving next year's home opener against the Baylor Bears. A game which was scheduled to be played in Auburn, Alabama, will now be played in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Georgia, as part of an arrangement with the Aflac kickoff game. Why, you may ask? Well, AD John Cohen said it is because they want to, quote, advance Auburn student athletes' ability to earn third-party NIL compensation, end quote. They are moving this game from Auburn to Atlanta so that Auburn football players can be involved in the activities and engagements which pay out NIL money. Basically, they said, we are taking a scheduled home contest against a Power 4 opponent that was the opener of next year's season, and we are moving it to Atlanta because it is more important that our football players be able to earn NIL money than it is that our fans be able to see us play in Auburn, Alabama, and that those millions and millions of dollars make their way into the local economy. That is the prioritization of college football. I'm not blowing Auburn up for this. I get it. I understand it. It's the right call. I am saying if you're a fan, that's got to be a little disheartening, right? And on top of that, the next question I would ask, will we get to, or perhaps when will we get to a point that colleges start to say our home games are for sale? Our home games are for sale. You can put money into our NIL. You can put money into the collective. You can put no money into us. Just provide a bunch of resources and opportunities for our kids to make NIL money. Our home games are for sale, whether it's one or two or three or four a year. Because you know, if Auburn does it, somebody else is going to do it. And if somebody else does it, somebody else is going to do it. And the next thing you know, a lot of schools are willingly giving up a home game to go play in a sponsored game for their kids to make some NIL money. But then if a few teams are doing it for a game, do we get to the point where teams are doing it for more? Because right now, the games are sponsored in week one. But let's keep it a buck here. If Aflac is looking and they're willing to spend that much money to bring Auburn and Baylor an unscheduled Atlanta game to Atlanta to play this contest, and we know they will because South Carolina, Virginia Tech have done it. Auburn's done it. Alabama's done it. Clemson's done it. Florida State's done it. Notre Dame's done it, et cetera, et cetera. If they're willing to do that for week one, you don't think they'd be willing to do it for week two or week six? Could we get to a point where conferences say, yeah, if you guys want to play a conference game at a neutral site because it opens up NIL revenue streams, have at it? Or does it become a spot where teams aren't playing non-conference games at home? They're selling off their non-con games, and they're because you have nine conference games now. 1 year you'll have five, and 1 year you'll have four. Are those just the only home games from now on? I don't know. But as we've said before, at the end of the day, decisions in college football are made based on the dollar bills, y'all, not what's best for the fans. So, five home games instead of six, or four instead of six, or three instead of five, maybe not as bad to a school if you can directly correlate that to a growth of NIL revenue of X percent over the years. The other story that comes up, and I'm going to give you the headline here because we're going to talk about this in the next segment. South Carolina was slated to play the Miami Hurricanes next year and in 2027 in a home and home. A release from the Gamecock Athletic Department announced yesterday that those games are canceled. It was a mutual decision between South Carolina and Miami to take that home and home off of the schedule. So, the non-conference schedule for 2006 for South Carolina now includes just two games, Towson at the crib and Clemson on the road. South Carolina is, quote, according to the press release, actively pursuing, end quote, a 12th opponent for next season. They had one. It was Miami. Why are they doing this? It's real simple. And I'll tell you in the next segment. I'm Rob. He's Lonzo. The Rob Brown Show is on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The University of South Carolina and the University of Miami were scheduled to play a home-and-home series next season and the year after. The Hurricanes were scheduled to play at Williams-Brice Stadium in Columbia, South Carolina in 2026. The Gamecocks were going to make a return trip to Hard Rock Stadium in 2027. However, the University of South Carolina and the University of Miami announced they have mutually agreed to cancel that home and home series for 2026 and 2027. Why? Because, and this one is not that complicated, because the SEC and the ACC are moving to 9-game conference schedules starting in 2026. South Carolina already had 2 non-con games on the schedule. They will host Towson, and they will play their road game, their annual rivalry non-con game against Clemson at the end of the year in Clemson, South Carolina. They are pursuing a 3rd non-conference game. Miami has 3 non-conference games in 2026. Florida A&M at the crib, Central Michigan at the crib, and a road trip to Notre Dame, which is an out-of-conference game for them, obviously. So, this is because you have moved to a 9-game schedule. And when, last year, the discussion between the Big Ten and the SEC began, because the Big Ten already moved to a 9-game conference slate and wanted the SEC to do the same, earlier this year, when the Big Ten began to apply pressure to the Southeastern Conference, utilizing the college football playoff as its leverage point, I said a year ago, and I said earlier this year, I want you to, as news breaks because of this, and it will, and the prediction was, and I am not patting myself on the back for this because this is an obvious one. This is like looking at someone walking with a blindfold across Wade Hampton and going, yeah, there's a very good chance that guy's getting hit by a car. Like, yes, that's the obvious outcome. But I said at the time, I want you to keep in mind, down the line, when we start to see news break, that teams are canceling what would have otherwise been very exciting and entertaining home and homes, like this one, I want you to remember why this is happening. It is not because the schools didn't want to play them. Obviously they did, or the contract wouldn't be in place. And for the record, you're only going to hear about the cancellation of home and homes. And these aren't the first ones. Alabama, West Virginia canceled a home and home series a week or two ago. You are going to hear this season and through the offseason more stories about home and home contracts being canceled. And then you'll stop hearing them. You'll stop hearing stories about home and homes getting canceled. Why? Because teams aren't going to sign up for them anymore. We've got all these home and homes that were scheduled potentially up to years ago that are going to be canceled. You're not going to hear next season about home and homes being canceled because they will all already be canceled and because no one is going to sign up for another one. I would like to remind you, I know it is beaten like a dead horse on this program, but the reason for this is not because conferences are just over the moon elated about a 9-game schedule. I genuinely do not think that Greg Sankey and the SEC wanted to move to a 9-game schedule. I think they were happy at 8. They had plenty of content out of the conference. They get more coverage for their conference than any other conference in football, and their teams got a bit of a break by not having to play a 3rd conference game, and they got the opportunity, which sometimes they took advantage of, for their SEC teams to go win a bunch of non-con games so that at the end of the year, the heaviest criticism about the Southeastern Conference, which is what annually? Well, when your whole conference enters the preseason ranked top 25, every game looks like a quality game. And if every game looks like a quality game, then the losses you take within the conference do not hurt you the way that losses in other conferences where teams do not start owning the most slots in the top 25 hurt you. If your conference only has three or four ranked teams and the SEC has seven or eight of them, when those losses happen in the conference, you're going to go, yeah, but that loss came in a conference that has seven or eight ranked teams. It's a better loss than a loss out of the Big Ten, which only has three or four ranked teams, or the ACC, which only has two or three or four ranked teams. So the reality is I think the SEC was fine with eight, but the reason that they were willing not to throw hands with the Big Ten was twofold. Number one, because the SEC wants the college football playoff when it expands. And I know that there has been discussion specifically from Rich Clark and the rest of the CFB committee that they may not expand next year. And they may not expand next year, maybe the year after that, but it will expand. And the SEC wants to ensure that when it expands, they are able to get expansion into a format that they want. But the Big Ten will have to go, either one of two things has to happen. Either A, the Big Ten and the SEC can agree on a format, in which case everybody else can suck it. You're dealing with that format. Or the SEC would have to make a bunch of concessions to the other conferences, the Big 12, the ACC, and the Group of Five conferences. They would have to make concessions to those conferences to get all of those conferences on board so that it's the SEC and all of those conferences overruling the Big Ten and what they wanted, which would have meant that there was, even if they got their way, less of a benefit with them getting their way because they would have had to give some of those resources back to the other conferences to get their support. It's very Game of Thronesy in the college football landscape. So the Big Ten said, look, here's the deal. Either you can go to a nine-game slate like we do. You can challenge yourselves and put up as many roadblocks between you and the playoffs, self-inflicted wounds between you and the playoffs as we did, or we're just going to push for a format you do not want and make it harder for you to get the rewards out of the college football playoffs that you do want for being the conference that you are. And the SEC said, all right, we'll give you what you want, Big Ten. And again, two reasons. One, so that they don't have to give concessions, my opinion, my speculation, they don't have to give concessions to the other conferences, taking resources off the table when they get their way. But also because, even if it's not what they particularly wanted, they get the same benefit of a nine-game conference slate that the Big Ten got. What is that? More inventory, more TV, more conference inventory to sell. So the next time that it's time to negotiate a television deal with Fox and whatever other smaller networks they feed their outer games to, they get to say, hey, Fox, you were giving us $1 billion. Now you get an entire extra week of Big Ten football. You get an entire extra week. So you were giving us $1 billion. Now we'd like $1.1 billion, $1.2 billion, because you are getting more conference games. And therefore, some conference games that are going to be good games. The SEC gets to do the same thing. They get to go to ESPN, and they get to say, look, you were already giving us $1.25 billion. Now we are giving you an entire extra week of SEC football, including, by the way, creating what we hope grow into big-time rivalries in the conference with those three annual rivals every year. You are getting one full additional week of Southeastern Conference football, and in that additional week, you are going to get three annual rivals for every school. Every school is going to play one rival that is in the top tier, one in the mid-tier, and one in the bottom tier. All the top rivals, they have an annual rivalry now. So they're going to match up every single year, which means that you get to sell that game every single year. And oh, by the way, there will be weeks where you have a couple of those games being played on the same day. What a slate for you, ESPN. if you get to put LSU Florida on at noon, you get to put Georgia South Carolina in the midday, and then you get to put Auburn Alabama in the nightcap. I know that's rivalry weekend. You get the point. You get the that's take us from $1.25 to $1.4 billion. They're good with it because of money. They're good with it because it is more inventory to sell to the TV networks, which will in turn drive up their primary moneymaker, their television revenue to the conference, distributed to the conference at large. So the sacrifice for that, the repercussion for that, is that games like these, South Carolina hosting Miami next year, and then South Carolina going to Miami the year after that, I would argue, based on where Miami is right now, and based on the direction that South Carolina hopes that it continues to go moving forward, there is a better than good chance that whatever weekend that game got played, it would have been one of the better games of the weekend. If that's like a week two, week three matchup, remember back in week one, we were all sorts of jacked up about week one football. And then week two rolled around and it was like, you know, this slate kind of sucks a little bit, right? Like, I very much remember that was the last Saturday I did Bet for the Cycle. And Double D, our producer, who's another college football guy, we were kind of laughing because I'm like, we're on noon to four. That's prime college football viewing window. There were no good games that day. If South Carolina-Miami was week two of this year, it would have easily have been the highlight game of the weekend. It is a game that 100% would have ended up on ESPN primetime that night. And what does that do for the school? How does that benefit you? Being the primetime game of a weekend, you go on and you put on a show, right? And for a team like South Carolina, that means putting Willie B on display. Was it week three against Vandy? Or week four, whatever it was, week three against Vandy. I was scrolling social media, and like a good chunk of my timeline, my For You timeline, right, where they just bring a bunch of randos you don't follow. I was looking through that. Like half my TL was people going, dog, Willie B looks like a nightclub, right? You think that's not attractive to be able to put it? Well, if you would have had Miami, South Carolina in week two, that would have been the highlight game. That would have been a game you could have sold Willie B as, bro, if you want to be at the coolest place to be in college football, you come on down to Columbia, South Carolina, and we got you, dog. And now you don't have that. And that is the sacrifice for picking up another SEC game. So enjoy your added game against Kentucky every year. You now don't get this home and home against Miami. This is, I don't care. Like, it is what it is to me, because I've seen the writing on this wall for years now. But at the same time, I'd be lying to say I'm not a little disappointed. Not shocked, but disappointed. Because this would have been a fantastic set of games between two schools. One trying to prove they are the dynasty now in the ACC, and one trying to prove that they deserve to be up there because they would be a dynasty team in the ACC, but they're in the best conference in college football. And it's gone. And it's gone so the SEC could have more inventory to sell to ESPN. And it's gone because ACC wants more inventory to sell to ESPN. Welcome to new college football, baby. I'm more upset about this than I am the portal and NIL. Let's take a break. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show rolls on. It is the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and you. 844-326-3663 is the number should you wish to be a part of the program. Now is a spectacular opportunity. There we go. Two different words. Say them separately, Rob Brown. To do so, text that number. I'll read them on the air. Like the texter who said, Alabama, West Virginia could have been the Kissing Cousins Bowl, LOL, but now we're going to miss it. Yeah, this isn't, like I said, the news of home and homes, like Alabama, West Virginia, like South Carolina, Miami being canceled, it should not come as a shock to any of you. It should not come to a shock as any of you, because I've been telling you for a while, the writing is on the proverbial wall. When the Big Ten shifted to a 9-game conference slate, my belief at the time, and I was called cynical, and I was called jaded, and I was called all sorts of fun little names. My take at the time was, this isn't because there is a clamoring for additional Big Ten conference games. In fact, if there is a clamoring amongst the fan bases, I think the clamoring, I've said clamoring enough times, it sounds like a weird word now. I think the clamoring is not for more conference game. It's for more non-conference games. It's for more big-time games. It is for more LSU-Clemson matchups to open the year. It is for more Alabama-Florida State matchups to open the year. It is for more big-time, traditional, classic, blue-blood college football rivalries or non-rivalries, non-conference games. It is for more the ACC's best being challenged by a middle of the pack. Why is that game interesting, South Carolina-Miami? Because with Carson Beck going to the NFL next year, there would be a lot of questions about what Miami is going to be. I think very fair questions about what Miami is going to be next year. On the flip side, with Lenora Sellers going to the NFL, there are a lot of questions about whether or not South Carolina is going to be able to maintain what was built to get to a point where you are attractive to a recruit like Lenora Sellers, to get the talent where you have special players that can take South Carolina to punch above their weight class, and to do so for a long enough period of time that those recruits begin to beget more recruits. And now South Carolina is all of a sudden, you go, oh man, that's not a team for whomst 8-4 would be a great year. That's a team that for whomst 9-3 is the expected margin. A team for which a 10-win season should be a norm. A team that may occasionally make it into the playoffs, maybe threatens for, if you want to move up in the ranks, winning conference games is step number one. But from the entertainment perspective, you're telling me if you're an SEC fan, you wouldn't want to watch one of yours take on last year's, I think, ACC champion and prove that, hey, our mid teams can beat the best you've got? Of course. If you're an ACC team, hell, man, I've been covering this conference for as long as I've been in radio down there close to Tallahassee, Florida. If you're an ACC team, every win over an SEC team is a dunk opportunity. But we're not going to get that. And we're not going to get that because the conferences wanted their 9-game slates. The Big Ten wanted their 9-game slate so that they could get the money from Fox. But the Big Ten did not want to be alone in having to play additional games against top Power 4 teams. So they strong-armed the SEC. Hey, you give us what we want in this case, and we'll give you what you want when we expand the playoffs. And the SEC said, bet, we will absolutely do that. This is a point of compromise because we feel that getting the format we want for the expanded playoffs is worth more to us than having a 9-game slate. But also we get the extra television revenue when the new TV contracts are up for renegotiation as well. These games are going by the wayside, and they are going by the wayside for one reason and one reason alone, the dollar bills, y'all. So we talked earlier in the show about the decision made yesterday by the Auburn Tigers. Auburn was slated to open their season next year, against the Baylor Bears. They had a home-and-home with Baylor on the line. That is a Big 12 Power 4 opponent that Auburn went out to Waco and played Baylor this year. And next year, Baylor was scheduled to make the return trip to Opelika, Alabama. Auburn yesterday said they are moving that game out of Opelika and they are taking it right up the road to Atlanta, Georgia as part of the AFLAC college football season kickoff festivities. Auburn and Baylor will be played at Mercedes-Benz Stadium next year. Now, just to give you the details that we are now aware of, Auburn is going to get the same share of tickets that they would have gotten had this been a home game, 27,000 plus tickets. The Baylor Bears will receive the 3,000 tickets that they would have received had they played this game at Auburn. And the other 47,700 whatever tickets it is, the rest of those tickets will be distributed by AFLAC, by the title sponsors of the game. Again, I think it works out well for Baylor because while it is a bigger stadium, at the same time, with 47,000 seats being just up for grabs nationally, you're going to have opportunity if there are more than, and I would assume there are, 3,000 Baylor fans that want to be at this game. They now have access to those tickets in a way they would not have had they been held all exclusively by Auburn. If you are in Atlanta, maybe you're not a Baylor fan or an Auburn fan, but you are a fan like me of just going to football games when you get the chance, you'll be able to pop a ticket. Probably not going to be the world's most expensive ticket. You can pop a ticket. Baylor gets the benefit of kind of having the home field advantage quieted to some degree. But this move got made specifically because, and this is not speculation from your boy Rob Brown, Auburn said it. This got moved not because they wanted it to be moved. This got moved because AFLAC does a lot of events, festivities, meet and greets, public gatherings, whatever. And AFLAC will sign players to NIL deals to be at these events. So AFLAC may very well sign a deal with Auburn and Baylor that says, hey, we want to highlight this game. We want this game to be special. We want to give people a reason to come here and to see our signage. So we would like to sign a contract for $1,000, $2,000, $5,000 for every player on the roster to come to a bowling alley one night or to be at the Georgia Convention Center for Auburn and Baylor fans to come out and take pictures and shake hands. Or we would like to give every player on the roster $5,000 to wear around an AFLAC logo all week so that every time that they are on TV on the lead up to and through kickoff, the AFLAC logo is front and center with the belief that this will be one of those week one highlight games in prime time, whether it's the midday or the evening slot. So Auburn straight up said, we are moving this game because AFLAC is going to provide third party NIL compensation to our players and we want to maximize the amount of money that they can make. So, again, like the overwhelming question for that story that I have is this step one in getting to a point where colleges, because listen, Auburn is a very big SEC school. Are they Ohio State? Are they Georgia? Are they Alabama? Not right now. Do they have the potential to be? Yeah. I would say during the Cam Newton era, they were absolutely in that discussion. So, does this get to a point down the line where other schools look at this? And I do think a lot is going to be like how much NIL is on the table, right? If AFLAC comes off $10 million, they're not going to, but if they come off $10 million split between the two schools, $5 million in NIL revenue across your roster, that might very well be worth selling a home game, right? Auctioning off a home game. Hey, Geico and AFLAC and Ford and Mass Mutual of Omaha and Rallies and McDonald's and Sears, whoever. Our home game opener is for sale. It is for auction. Whoever is willing to put the most money in NIL contracts down to our players, we will come to your venue of choice for a football game. Do we get to a point where we end up seeing in week one of college football, like in college basketball, we start seeing in Atlanta three games, all titled by Aflac. And it's three big games all in a row. I don't know. But also, I think you also have to stick on to the end of that. A game like this is attractive because it is a non-conference home and home, right? Now, we just told you 10 minutes ago, South Carolina and Auburn just canceled their home and home. Alabama and West Virginia just canceled their home and home. There are a number of big time, would be otherwise at least interesting home and homes being canceled. Will there be enough games like this to go around for this to become a thing? I don't know. Like I said, there's a million moving parts to this story. If I'm Aflac and I want to throw a college football kickoff opener in week one that is titled after me and I know everybody's going to watch it, I don't want South Carolina, South Carolina State, with all due respect. I want South Carolina, Miami. I want Auburn, Baylor. I want Clemson, LSU. I want those types of games. Will we have enough of those to go around? This is, and I've had this thought before, there has been the conversation in years gone by because step one, for instance, in the ACC, where they said every team will play 10 Power 4 opponents, right? Your nine conference games plus one Power 4 non-conference game. Now, they did that to protect Florida State, Florida. They did that to protect Georgia Tech, Georgia. They did that to protect Louisville, Kentucky. Like, they did that to protect the teams that are already playing those types of games. So does that make it possible that down the line, rivalry games start to become up for grabs, right? Because if I'm South Carolina, I just took Miami off the roster next year. I have Towson and I have Clemson. If I took Miami off, do you think that they're going to go grab a third non-conference game against, I don't know, Michigan? Nah, bro. Right? They're not going to do that. They're not going to add another Power 4 game against Florida State. They're not going to do that. They're going to pick an SC State. They're going to pick a Furman. They're going to pick a cupcake team so that they fill out their schedule and they go, we have nine games in the SEC, a 10th against Clemson. We have two games to play with. We want to ensure, assuming that Towson is the game before Clemson, the tune-up game before the rivalry weekend, I want a week one game against a nobody to go out there and get right. I don't want to play Virginia Tech again, right? So do we see at that point, if you're South Carolina and you would like to be on the national scene, and if you have a, not that you will next year, but if you have a Lenora Sellers, who is a national story of interest, if teams like Aflac, et cetera, are interested in having a title game, could we end up, and I understand that this is dramatic, but could we end up in a point where Clemson, South Carolina gets moved to Atlanta and it becomes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Aflac Rivalry Weekend. We take you now to Atlanta. We're South Carolina. You know what I mean? Like the point here is once you get to a spot where it is exclusively about deep diving money, when it gets to exclusively about profit over people, which is, to me, where college football is. I know it drives people crazy, and some in particular people roll their eyes. It's late-stage capitalism entering college football. Nothing matters more. Do you disagree with the take that nothing matters more than money in the decision-making process? Do you disagree with that take?
I will give this take that nothing has ever mattered other than money. You act like it's a new thing. It's always been there. It's what it's always been about. Once they found out, hey, we can make money selling tickets to watch this product, it's been about making money.
I don't disagree. But I also feel like in years gone by, there has always been a how do we maximize people's enjoyment of this event while making money off of it to the best of our abilities.
People who love their teams in college football will pass that down to their children and their children's children and their children's children. The product is going to stay there. Now, I don't know what you could do to kill college football.
I'm not saying kill it. I do not disagree. The product is going to stay there. But the product is going to change while it stays there. The product's not going anywhere. But it is changing. We know it's not a conversation that it is changing. And so the question mark is, at which point is there a point? Is there a line somewhere? And I think this is different for every person, a subjective line. Is there a line where College football gets to a point that you go, it has changed so much, I do not recognize it anymore. And I'll use music as the example. Yesterday, I ended up in a car with the wifey, and she was listening to some top 40 stuff. And I'm like, I don't recognize any of this. Not like I don't know who the artist is. I mean, I'm listening to the music, and I'm like, it's like that episode of South Park where Kyle hears contemporary music, and it just sounds like fart sounds in his ears. Like, that's where I was yesterday. And it's not bad. The kids love this stuff. That's fine. But to me, contemporary pop music has changed so much that I do not identify with it anymore, and therefore it's no longer enjoyable.
Yeah, but that's an age thing. That it happens to all of us.
Right. I'm not giving the reason. I'm saying it does happen.
People, NIL, college is not the same. Transfer portal, college is not the same. Some of those people stopped watching, but not enough to make a difference.
I agree with that. But like I said, I do think that those things did not change the game of football. I do think it gets to a point, if you get to a spot where, yo, South Carolina Clemson this year is in Atlanta, not in Columbia. Like, that doesn't have the same as, let's go listen to Stan Storm and wave the towels around. Clemson, South Carolina is not in Death Valley this year. It's in Orlando. Doesn't really have the same vibe as, let's watch the boys run down the hill, light the fireworks up, right? I don't know. Where do y'all land on this? Or am I just being over dramatic, which I've been told I tend to do sometimes. I don't know. We'll talk more about it later on. We'll get some NFL in the next hour.
Sorry.
Because Orlando, the AFC is drunk.
Or Clemson. I think a lot of people are going to choose Orlando.
Yeah, but not if you're Clemson. As a Clemson football fan, waiting for your rivalry game.
They'll go wherever their team is.
We're coming back to that. I'm Rob. He's Lonzo. This is a Sports Flash.
It is indeed. Trevor Lawrence and the Jacksonville Jaguars are 4-1 after a 31-28 win over the Kansas City Chiefs last night. Lawrence completed 18 of 25 passes for 221 yards, a touchdown, and a pick, and ran for 54 yards and a pair of touchdowns. In the MLB playoffs, the Dodgers took a 2-0 series lead with a second win in Philly, 4-2. Blake Snell went six innings with just one hit, striking out nine. The Milwaukee Brewers took both wins at home for a 2-0 series lead over the Cubs. The 7-3 win last night. All seven Brewers scored or home runs. Rookie Jacob Mizrowski got the win with three innings of relief. The Atlanta Braves GM Alex Anthopoulos told the media that while the team hopes to find a replacement for manager Brian Snitker, the team hasn't conducted any interviews for the position. Texas has already hired former Marlins manager Skip Shoemaker, taking one big name off the board.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.